Welcome to Take Back, the Universe Loves to Laugh, here at Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM or worldwide, radio.dominican.edu. I am your host, Barbara McVeigh. We got big things to talk about here on Take Back, and we have an agenda. As our planet faces global climate change, melting polar ice caps, and ocean acidification, we like to remain positive. There's hope. We're still alive. Here at Take Back, we try to get deep into understanding these issues and ask big questions about what does it mean to be human and where are we going wrong on planet Earth. Each Tuesday at noon here on Take Back, we will have thinkers, poets, writers, educators, musicians, and environmentalists help us get it right and navigate this crazy journey called life. Maybe we'll get inspired to make some big changes and look at who we have been and why. Today's guest is Tamara Peters, who has been working for Planet Earth since 1970, when Earth Day was launched. She was on the staff of the Nature Conservancy as it grew from 17 employees to an international organization, the Natural Resources Defense Council as it began its campaign to stop global warming in the 1980s, Rainforest Action Network when it launched its campaign against Mitsubishi's rainforest destruction, and San Francisco Friends of the Urban Forest. Whereas executive director, she learned about the power of people coming together to improve their neighborhoods. Tamara has served on the boards of both National EarthShare and EarthShare California. She served as president and was trustee for 18 years of the Strong Foundation for Environmental Values that has supported hundreds of grassroots environmental organizations. And most recently, she served for 7 years on Sustainable Marin's board. That is a record. I'll say you've been busy, Tamara.
I have.
Thank you so much. And even today, Tamara heads up what we're going to talk about today as well, Resilient Neighborhoods, a community educational effort to empower us to reduce our carbon footprint. I personally took Tamara's class last year and I discovered something very profound. I learned to lose pounds and fast. In other words, reduce carbon emissions. We all need to take responsibility for our actions, and that needs to start now. So good afternoon, Tamara, and thanks so much for coming to Take Back.
It's a pleasure to be here, Barbara.
You have been busy, boy, since 1970.
Yes, indeed.
You've seen a lot of action and seen a lot of ebbs and flows of the environmental movement as well.
Yes.
This is not a new conversation about global climate change, as we were just talking about before this programming. This has been going on since the 1970s.
Yes. Yeah. I remember when I was working at NRDC in the late 80s, one of the staff people came to San Francisco office where I was working. He came from New York. And we went out to lunch because he was trying to tell me the difference between CFCs and GHGs. So the chlorofluorocarbons from the ozone depletion and greenhouse gases. And that's when I first learned about climate change and the program as that was going on. And nobody else was talking about it.
I was reading a book, actually I have it on my lap as proof. It's called Rays of Hope, The Transition to a Post-Petroleum World, written by Dennis Hayes, published in 1977, mm-hmm. World Watch Institute,
yeah.
Talking profoundly about global climate change, carbon emissions, and that is the foremost environmental problem today. And this was written in 1977.
Yeah. We don't want to deal with it.
How did we get here 35 years later and here we are talking about carbon? Well, maybe we could just start with this. Carbon, what are you doing today? Because there's a lot of talk about our carbon footprints and what does that actually really mean?
Well, most people know about the greenhouse gases now and the carbon in the atmosphere that causes it to warm. And as it does, it's like creates a greenhouse and the sun's rays get trapped in by the earth rather than bouncing off like they normally do. So that heats up the atmosphere and it heats up the oceans and causes the whole climate to change. So that's that piece of it. And where I'm working on I created Resilient Neighborhoods because I was interested in empowering citizens to actually do something about it. Because we the people that cared, that knew about it, kept waiting for government to act, you know, and there was a huge frustration. Why doesn't government do something? How can I get government to do something, take some action? And a lot of frustration. And what I looked at from my past experience was, what can people do? What can we do? We're part of the problem. And it's simple things like people don't even know, like when you take a shower in the morning, you don't think about it. But when you by turning on the hot water, you've actually turned on your gas, probably gas water heater, and that burning of fossil fuels, the gas, causes carbon emissions. The second thing that people don't know here in Marin is, and elsewhere, is in Marin, the single biggest use of energy, which using energy causes carbon emissions, is pumping the water back into your house that's gone down the drain. So it's that even if we deeply care, when we take just the act of turning on your shower in the morning, we don't know that we're causing global warming. And by that simple action of reducing our shower time, we can reduce the amount of carbon emissions that we're putting in the atmosphere. It's these simple actions, driving less. Should I go into the program?
I think it'd be great. Yeah. Let's hear about this program.
So the program I started in, I came up with when I kind of retired from my environmental work. I thought, what am I going to do now? And climate change is the biggest issue of our time. So I said, let me see if I could do something about it. So I, with the help of some others, I created this program, and I wanted it to be about reducing carbon, but I also wanted it to be about adaptation. Climate change is here, and we need to adapt to it. We need to do what we can to mitigate what's coming and just learn to live with and be prepared for what a warming planet's bringing our way. So I created the program, and it's set up like a Weight Watchers program, where it's done by a group of people. We call it an eco team, like Barbara was in, like you were in, getting together. The team names itself like low carb coyotes, a group of neighbors that live near Open Space Reserve. My favorite team name was Fettuccini Carbonatas. And so that's a fun part of it. So the team of it's like 5 to 8 households get together, and they go on a low carbon diet to lose 5,000 pounds in 60 days. So we have fun with it, treating it like a Weight Watchers program. And the first thing every household does is they figure out what they go and use a carbon calculator, and they find out what their starting household emissions are. So that like Weight Watchers, we set up the team so I would be the coach and the team members support each other. There's no judgment if you weigh in with a heavy carbon footprint. It's very supportive. And from there, we have over 100 actions that people can take to reduce their carbon footprint, and also an adaptation piece. We look at what we eat, you know, the carbon footprint from eating beef and animal flesh. We look at our shopping decisions, what we buy, how that affects the planet and other people. We learn about water conservation, waste that generates, particularly our green waste that generates methane, which is a super greenhouse gas that's 25 times more potent in global warming, causing global warming than carbon. And let's see, transportation, which is the highest here in Marin County. Home energy. The average U.S. home leaks so much air, it's as if you have, there's a square foot hole cut in the wall. And so when you, if you've got an older house and you go down and if you turn the heat on, the heat up in the winter, it's like you left the window open upstairs and you're wasting fossil fuels. So that's one of the hardest things for people to do, is like seal their house. But that's one of very, very important things that you can do. And then the last part of the program is about emergency preparedness, building community in our neighborhoods, and people looking after their neighbors and after each other. Because with climate change, we're all in this together.
And I love what you say about no judgment. And that's a hard one, because we all want to point the finger at somebody else, don't we?
Yeah.
When really it's the best place just to look at ourselves and ask what we can each be doing.
Yeah. But a lot of people also feel if they have a higher footprint, we compare ourselves to each other. And at the end of the program, if, you know, somebody has reduced more than we did, we feel bad and all that. So part of it is just realizing that we're all part of this team, and we add up the team scores at the end of the program, and we take a picture of the team holding up a sign with their team name on it, showing how much carbon they reduced and how many resilient points they earned, which is our adaptation for our adaptation actions. And we publicize that. We publicize that to the cities and towns that we're working with. Is it okay for me? I'm just kind of rolling here.
Roll it.
Okay.
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right, so I'm rolling here. We're really excited. All the cities and towns in Marin have climate action plans with goals. And the governments are working on it really hard, and they're greening up their fleets of vehicles, and they're trying to add solar panels and that kind of thing. But 65% of the carbon pollution in Marin comes from the residents. And local governments are not going to be dictating to people how long they take showers. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
So the cities and towns have looked to resilient neighborhoods more and more for help. And I've been working as a volunteer on this for 6 years, just building the program. And a couple of years ago, the city of San Rafael chipped in for part-time staff to help me. And what happened last spring, there's a group here in Marin called Marin Climate Energy Partnership, and it's a representative from all the cities and towns. Marin Clean Energy, which is our electricity provider, based here in Marin, started here in Marin, Transportation Authority of Marin, and the county services are all part of it, and the water district. They have been meeting for about 3 years now because they're all working on climate change, and they realize even though they're independently working on it, they'll do a better job if they coordinate. So that group's been meeting every month. Last spring they found some money that the California Energy Commission was making available in a competitive grant. And they voted unanimously to write a grant to try and get funding for resilient neighborhoods.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a small city grant project, and they got the funding.
Fantastic.
Which is going to start in September. So that is, I'll be paid for the first time. Imagine that.
Thank you. I just want to acknowledge how much work you put into this. And it's what motivates you? This will be a question for after. You continue with what you're saying, but I need to hear just what continues to motivate you behind all this.
Okay. So this grant is going to allow us to reach out. I'll be starting to work on a marketing plan. How can we reach the people who aren't ready to sign up? You know, they call them early adopters and innovators, like Barbara, you know, who sign up, oh, I care about this, I want to do something.
Yeah.
So how do we reach that next group of people in Marin? And in doing this because we're going to be working with more people, we're going to be expanding even more. I can't do all the teams anymore, or even my outreach associate, with her help, we can't. So we're going to be training trainers, developing materials, and we may be able to expand the program outside of Marin because other people have expressed an interest in it. And I think the CEC, the California Energy Commission, was interested in that too. So we're looking to create models to expand the program, reach new people in Marin, and we're hoping maybe that model can be replicated in other places as well.
So it's really establishing a model in order to share, and an easy model. And I'm going to give you some feedback on what I took away from the program, because I went in not knowing, you know, I understand. I mean, I changed my life around about 3 years ago, recognizing the same as you, although you did it about 30 years ago. And I'm a mother. I got two kids, and I just realized this is the most important thing to be doing for my children right now. Forget driving them to soccer practice. It's about taking stake in what's happening, because we need to move on it fast. We've lost a lot of time, but your class really opened up my own eyes to my own habits that I just don't even pay attention to just day to day, like the water or, and it just helped me stop and reflect on my own habits. Mm-hmm. And I'll have you know, I got an electric bike and that's what I rode today to the radio show.
Bravo.
And I love it. And you know what it does for me? It's, you know, now I'm just beginning to recognize all these different things in our day to day life that we don't pay attention to. And I really see just how many single drivers there are in very large cars. I wonder, how did we get to this point? I mean, but, you know, these are all things that I think we're slowly awakening to, thanks to people like you who really are motivating people. And I just have to ask, what motivates you to do this for so many people? Because you're the leader in this.
What really keeps me going is doing the teams. I love seeing the expression on people's faces, that the transformation that happens where people say, "You changed my life." And simply, you know, just telling a story, like I talk about plastic, and plastic is made from fossil fuels, and it doesn't go away. It never goes away. No critters like to eat it, so it will never turn into soil, and we're putting tons and tons and tons of it everywhere.
Every minute. I just saw a statistic that I can't remember, but it actually narrowed it down to the minute, how much plastic we're not only producing, but we're, you know, throwing away as well.
And we're unconscious. People don't know that. So one of the new lifestyles that I started doing was I take my own, granted it is plastic container with me to the farmer's market or to the grocery store. And when I'm buying something like salmon, say, I ask them to put it in the plastic container and put the little sticker on the side. And before, I was getting the piece of plastic that they used to weigh the salmon. Then they would wrap it in another kind of the butcher wrap paper, which used to be coated with wax, is now coated with plastic. Mm. And then they would put it in a plastic bag and give it to me. So I would have acquired three pieces of plastic that I didn't want before.
That you would use for probably a few hours until you got home and transferred it to something else.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So I told the clerk in the store why I was doing it, because of the plastics in the oceans. It doesn't go away. The same things we've been talking about. And I came into the store again, and the people, when we came in with our plastic container, they would kind of roll their eyes, you know, the clerk stuff. And the guy said, maybe it was a couple months later, he said, "I went out and I got a plastic container myself."
Congratulations.
Yeah, wow. And it was just, it's that kind of transform. And when I tell people that, they understand that just by adopting these new behaviors, mm-hmm. they become climate leaders. They become leaders themselves in modeling behavior that others can follow. So that's exciting for me too, when I see people starting to do different things.
You know, I work in a small independently run cafe in my little hometown. I do it 8 hours a week just to get out of my house, because I do a lot of writing and research and other things just to be around people mm-hmm. and see what's being talked about in my community. And I love it. It's my 8 hours of social time and coffee time and so forth. And I'm working, which is fun. But we had plastic straws. They're cheaper. And as an independent store, a small business, they're the ones who are struggling, because paper or other resources, they're expensive to give to the customers. So they're kind of caught. Well, as an employee, what I ended up doing was I bought paper straws. And I decided, you know, I have to take ultimate responsibility. I can't let who I'm working for or whatever determine that responsibility for me. Right or wrong, I went out and I bought paper straws and I started to serve them when I was working. You wouldn't believe how happy it made people when I served them paper straws with their smoothies or whatever. And as a result, the owners of the cafe realized they were able to fit it into their budget.
That's exactly the kind of leadership I'm talking about. Good for you.
Yeah.
Yay, Barbara.
Yeah. Whatever happened to our paper straws? They're so vintage and fun.
I know. There's been one of the actions I'm asking our participants to do, suggesting to them, is when you go into like a fast food place or a restaurant and they give you plastic utensils and they give you plastic straws and they give you all the stuff that you don't want, to just say, would you do me a favor and everybody, the planet a favor, and ask if people want them before you automatically stick them in the bag.
Yeah.
And there have been 17 restaurants in the city of San Rafael now that are asking first.
Fantastic.
Again, because people went out and just started saying, would you do that? And now we have to frequent those restaurants and say, I'm here because you did this action.
And is there a list? Is there anywhere that we can acknowledge these?
There is a list of the San Rafael. I can send you that.
Yeah, that'd be great. We can put it up on the website.
Yeah.
And really try to support those, as you were saying, no judgment, but support the people who are really taking action for all of us. Because we're all in this together,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yeah.
We're in a system that we didn't exactly ask for.
And we need to share the stories, yes, the success stories.
Yeah.
We're getting our participants now. I started doing this after you graduated from our program.
Yes.
We're getting our participants to take selfies of themselves taking actions and like to do a little write-up about their story and then post it on Facebook and get the word out. Again, because it motivates other people and empowers them to say, I could do that.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a positive approach rather than pointing the finger and saying, oh, look what they're doing. Oh, that's so bad. Because in reality, we're all doing something, whether we recognize it or not, that could be done in a better way.
Yeah.
And that's where we have to come from, don't we? On a positive level.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what did we get to this point? I want to know what motivates you. What gets you up in the morning and makes you create all of this incredible work for everybody?
So it's the teams, really, the feedback from them, the seeing that they're reducing carbon. And we've now had, we've reduced not Resilient Neighborhoods, the people in Marin, have reduced 3.9 million pounds of carbon. That's like taking 1,800 Marin homes completely off the grid forever.
Wow.
Yeah. Or is it also equivalent, if you want to do polar bears, of keeping an acre of Arctic sea ice from melting every year.
And California is trying to take a lead in this work as well.
Yeah.
I mean, we're doing such great work here in Marin, a lot of effort. And a lot of leaders like Paul Hawken and David Herlocker, even, who works with Marin Open Space. And I know for years he got me out there, among many other people, just to get on the ground and cultivate our native species and get connected to what it is that we have. So we're doing a lot of great work here in Marin. But California has really taken a strong lead in this at a very important time.
And some people, particularly when I started the program, would say, how does what I do matter? And it's like somebody saying, why does my vote matter? And we saw what happened with that.
Yes.
what we're doing is, and what I tell people in the program, is we are a part of California's effort. We are, people have been watching California. The Global Warming Solutions Act of 2006, even the climate action plans of each of our cities and towns have done, are part of the California's solution to meet its goals. So we're part of our city and town's goals, and it's part of California's. The world is watching what California's going to do. And first they were waiting to see, when the cap and trade laws came into effect, they were waiting to see if California's economy would tank. You know, before we risk anything, let's go see what's happening.
And
with
we
California.
Are the fifth largest economy in the world.
Yes. And the Bay Area is the 21st largest economy in the world.
Wow.
Yeah. And our carbon emissions in the Bay Area are just below those of Canada.
That's impressive.
Yeah. What we do, there's a momentum that we the people have in California that was feeding into California's success with the world watching and spurring on other nation states. Since Trump has come into the White House and backed out of the Paris Accord, as you know, Jerry Brown has really, really stepped up. And he said, although the American government has stepped out of the Paris Accord, the American society has not.
Yes.
And so California, so it's the grassroots around the world. Governor Brown started it's called the Under 2 MOU, the under 2 degrees Celsius memorandum of understanding. I don't remember the statistics, but I think it's 1.5 billion people have signed based on their sub-regional territories that they live in, have signed it and committed to reducing their carbon footprint in that level. So there's a huge grassroots effort that has mobilized, and we're all a part of that here in California. When I do the program, I let people see how each of the actions fits under the California's strategic. They have six pillars that they created, and I can see how people can see how their actions fit into what California's needs to do, and how important each step is, including the adaptation piece.
This is so great to hear, because what you're doing is sharing these incredible efforts and successes, and these are being overshadowed by a lot of noise right now. So it's really important to hear about these successes and this mobilization that we are experiencing in the state, to remember that there are people out there fighting for us. And I'm fighting. I don't like to use that word, because it has a bit of a negative. Let's just say striving for us and creating for us, because it's really about a mindset, isn't it? It's about recreating our societies. And how fun is that?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, this is like the most exciting time of our humanity, because we have a problem. We got a big problem. And we've been down this road before. This is not new, except just right now the stakes are higher. I mean, you know, switch back. We were just talking before the show about the 1970s, and you were part of that decade. It was the environmental decade.
Yeah.
There were incredible efforts made to the Oceanic Society. So many different nonprofit organizations. Earth Day 1970. Jimmy Carter, do you remember that one speech he gave about the energy crisis? And he wore his little cardigan sweater.
Yes, in front of the fireplace.
Yes, and that was all in intention to help us remind ourselves to conserve energy. He said it was the number one problem. He said it was the moral equivalent of war to be independent of energy. I mean, that man, he just needs to be honored today.
And he was encouraging individual action, recognizing that if all of us do it together,
yes,
we can make a difference.
And he was living it.
Yes.
You know, he wasn't just saying it, but he was living it. And he has this
totally authentic person. I really respect him so much.
He's an incredible leader. I have to tell you about a little event that's coming up with him. But Jerry Brown was governor at that time when Reagan came in and really took us in a very, very different direction. So this is opportunity to reflect of, we cannot walk that path again. And this is real time to dig our heels into the soil and start creating this magical, I think it's a great time.
You talk about a society transformation. Some examples, an example of a team that just finished, our teams evolved. We started in neighborhoods, which is how the organization got its name, Resilient Neighborhoods. And I thought back then that we would just go into a neighborhood and everybody would sign up.
Right.
No.
Really?
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't meet Tuesday nights. I can only meet Thursday nights, and I can't do this right now. I have a big project due. So evolved, and now we're offering our classes in community centers and Mill Valley Public Library, where people that don't know each other come together because they care and they meet and they bond. And we had a group of eight from eight different households meet in the San Rafael Community Center where you did the program.
Yeah.
And they just finished a few weeks ago, and one of them rented the movie Cowspiracy about going vegan, and she's vegan, so she's invited the whole team to her house to show Cowspiracy and serve a vegan meal.
Nice.
And then they're talking about meeting after that, continuing on. So that's real community building based on changing behavior, based on it's creating a movement. Creating a movement of people.
Yeah. It's back to Jimmy Carter, another one of his speeches. He said, I think it was the final warning speech, where he said, we're beginning to value people by how much they have instead of what they do. I mean, there was a cultural pivot that was happening at that period of time, and he called it out. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure he was right. I mean, we really have valued the people who are making the big bucks rather than the people who are really on the ground doing the good work for all of us.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I remember my great uncle. I loved this man to death. He was an incredible human being, high level integrity. But I remember him telling, this was maybe 20 years ago.
Okay.
He told me the story of a long-haired hippie who came knocking at his door trying to get him to sign a Save the World petition. And my uncle totally knocked him down and said, oh, you know, long-haired hippie, his shirt was hanging out, wasn't even tucked in. And I mean, he was really grumpy about it. And I was probably about 22 years old, and I laid into my uncle. I said, how dare you say that? He's trying to, you know, and it actually made him pause because somehow there was a mindset that had been shaped in his generation or his, you know, community or whatever, where it was a different story that they were holding tight to, whereas earning a living, you know, being independent and all these other aspects were what was important. And when he paused and he rethought it was, he even acknowledged, he's all, you know, you're kind of right. I don't know how I got that in my head.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like that for a lot of people.
What I do in the program is after when we're about to end the first meeting, I show people the story of stuff. Do you remember
that
by Annie Leonard? Just the part on acquiring stuff.
Yes.
On the golden era of consumption. And then I ask people to, part of their homework is to go home and just look at all the stuff around them. And before they acquire anything new during the 2 weeks between the meetings, to think about where it came from, how it was made, what was extracted from the earth, from the planet to make it, and can it go back, can it be returned to the earth? Will it go back to the soil, be part of the earth's systems? Does it have plastic in it, which can never go back? So it's just starting to own yourself or see yourself as part of the earth's systems, and you're sort of a pass-through vehicle, you know, where you're using part of the earth, and then your responsibility is to return things to the earth after, you know, you don't want them or can no longer use them. So the power of choice in what you acquire is incredibly important, and that's what you're talking about, is reframing the values and the understandings of who we are on this planet.
And we've been trained, I mean, this, and I'm about 50 years old, and I can say these last 35 years, it's been training ground to be consumers. Mm-hmm. We have been taught to get a deal. I was talking about this with somebody else the other day. It's like, this is, you get excited about getting a deal. We've been trained mindfully this way.
Yes.
You know, since our teen years and all through. And it's right now we have to reshape the way that we think about everything.
Exactly.
So I had these neighbors, dear neighbors. He was a doctor, elderly couple. She was highly involved with schools, political work, fundraising. I mean, really the quintessential couple that you would just admire. And I loved them dearly. I still do. I do. They had a big 4-bedroom house here in Marin, and they were getting ready to leave their big house. They were beginning to have problems walking and things, and they were going to go, you know, into a retirement center. And day after day, I watched my dear neighbor dump her stuff in the garbage can. She couldn't get rid of the stuff, you know, sets of dinnerware that for parties, and I could see her getting more disturbed each day. And finally, I went over and I was helping her move, and she came up to me with a slotted spoon, and she said to me, "You have no idea how hard I looked for this one slotted spoon that I used one time." And I've been carrying it in my drawers for 5 years.
Wow.
But she was, and I, through her experience, I was recognizing, you know, all of this time we spend looking for something that we use maybe one time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then all of her cupboards and, you know, and she was they were both, and they still, in my view, are highly people to respect, but they also got caught up in this. And she even said to me at the end, she says, "I am spending the last years of my life trying to figure out what to do with junk. How did this happen?" You know?
Do you remember when, this is in Story of Stuff, when after 9/11, when the country was in chaos,
yes,
and so President Bush's plea to Americans was to go shopping.
I remember.
Yeah, not take care of your family. Let's, you know, let's band together. But it was like, go shopping.
What about salsa dancing? Let's just start dancing. We don't consume anything except good energy if we just get dancing, right?
There you go. There you go.
But yeah, well, I mean, let's talk about that. Consumption helps this idea of an economy, mm-hmm. helps with Wall Street numbers. makes whoever is in charge look good, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, somehow we've created this system this way that we're trapped in.
Yeah.
I mean,
and the CEOs in Silicon Valley have sat down and they said, okay, so we're creating this technology that is taking away people's jobs, the meaning that they have in their life, the work that they do, supporting their families and themselves. If things keep going with, you know, IT and all that, there will not be work for millions of people. There will not be jobs because machines will be doing them.
Yeah.
So how are we to live? How are people to live? And what they came up with was that everybody gets basically a minimum living wage.
I've been hearing about this.
So how,
this is brilliant.
How would we live our society? I have this image of people being earth stewards. Mm. There are the people that are making sure the plants and the animals. Plants are moving, and animals 15 feet a day towards the poles right now because of a warming planet. So how can we care for that? How can we, and it becomes a life, a work, something that people do that gives their lives meaning, can reconnect them with who they are, which is a part of nature. And they are this growing army of earth stewards that work on carbon sequestration and planting trees and putting compost on grasslands to take the carbon out of the air to help heal our planet and to keep the plants and animals and the natural systems going at the same time as we ourselves move back into our lifestyles, which are part of the natural system. I mean, that's my kind of vision of what I would see in the future.
That really taps into this other movement about the death culture, of really recognizing death, because we don't talk about it. To die is a bad thing, where nobody gets out of here alive,
right?
And so there are these death cafes, and Don Gross, who did a program at KLW.
I hadn't heard of this, a death cafe?
Yeah, what happens, I mean, it's really beautiful, is, and it's international, you're invited to these dinners, and the topic is death. You talk about loved ones who have died.
Yeah.
And by doing that, you start talking about what really matters in life, and what we take away from the people that we've loved who have died. And it's not about the slotted spoons that, you know, end up in a drawer. It's about real life things. And these are the kind of conversations that make us remember what we are as human beings and what's really important in life.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing that's emerging too, which gives us hope, is, these ideas, these mountaintop removal areas in like West Virginia that have just decimated communities. There's this talk about turning them into death sanctuaries. So when you die, instead of being, put into a casket, into the earth, what if we were to regenerate our ashes into a living tree? And the cost death, and it's expensive to die, it really is. And even the city of San Francisco, they have to deal with unknown deaths, the highest number of any city in the country, if you can believe that. They have to pay for the cremation.
Wow.
What about taking that money and putting it into regrowing a mountain? I mean, wouldn't that be beautiful?
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many great ideas that people are cultivating.
I was just thinking, this is a little kind of off, but I've been learning more about composting and how it can be used to sequester carbon and take it out of the air. So the compost is being made right now from our green waste, the stuff that we put in the green cans that goes off. It's already purchased before they even make it. There's such a demand for compost. Hey, what about our bodies?
Yeah.
I mean, we would just become part of the natural cycles of things too.
I mean, to me, walking into a forest where I can go to a tree that was my grandmother or my mother, it's giving homage to life and regrowth.
That's lovely.
I was actually at a cemetery not long ago, not to talk bad, I try really hard not to like put anything down, but you can see the differences. But today's cemeteries, they're flat, they're stones, they're not being used unless you go to visit somebody. So what about making it into a nature sanctuary for everybody to enjoy and respect life and death?
Yeah.
Yeah. While you regrow a mountain. How fun would that be? I mean, because not only, like you were saying, earth stewards, that what a way to really engage with the native plants and animals mm-hmm. and really cultivate mm-hmm. and understand botanicals and what's important.
Yeah. And yeah.
That we've lost.
Right, right.
Yeah. So there's hope.
Yeah.
Oh, fun.
Can I give a...
Yes, let's hear what you're up to. I just wanted to remind everyone, we are here at Take Back the Universe Loves to Laugh here at Penguin Radio 102.3 FM or worldwide radio.dominican.edu. My guest today is Tamara Peters. She's with Resilient Neighborhoods, a community educational organization with efforts to empower us to reduce our carbon footprint. And we're doing it. We're actually having fun doing it.
Yes.
It's so satisfying.
Yes.
So what do you have for us?
So I just wanted to let people know part of this California Energy Commission program that we're doing to expand out. We've got some classes going to be that are people could sign up right now if they're interested that are starting in September. One at the San Rafael Community Center, which is Central Marin, and the other one is the Mill Valley Public Library. And you can go to our website. There'll be a link with this, right? ResilientNeighborhoods.org. And
let's say that really slowly. ResilientNeighborhoods.org.
Right.
Okay.
And the the classes are at night. There's starting at 7. There's 5 of them, and they meet every other week. In San Rafael, it starts on September 26th, and at the Mill Valley Public Library, it's on Thursday nights, and it starts at 7 p.m. on September 21st. So it's really a fun, free, and rewarding thing to do. People, as I said before, if they feel like it changes their lives, are the emergency preparedness piece of our program. We actually have, even if you do the program with people you don't know, it sends you back into creating an emergency plan for your own house, but we also encourage people to just check in with a neighbor and look out for each other and build that. Marin's supposed to have an increase of 4 to 5 fold increase in wildfires here. And that's a huge danger this year. So we need to know if there's a lot of smoke in the air, if there's a fire coming our way. Embers can fly through the air a mile and start a new fire. They can just leapfrog through a community. And we need to know how to respond quickly. And most people do not. I mean, Marin's doing a better job than a lot of areas. Yeah. But that's really important. And also for people to get involved in sea level rise and other things, ways to adapt. And we talk about that in our program too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, this is, it's really being part of a frontier, mindful frontier of really healing not only ourselves, but our planet.
Right.
It's like an adventure. I think even Jimmy Carter had said it when he put solar panels on the White House. This could be remembered as a road not taken, or it could be the greatest adventure that we've ever experienced, which is in a film that I'll be showing tomorrow night at Community Media Center of Marin. Because I'm really interested in that period of time between post-Jimmy Carter and Jimmy Carter's administration, because everything that we're talking about right now is what was being talked about then.
Yes.
And this is opportunity for us to reflect on, well, what happened at that point in time? How did we lose these 35 years?
Yeah.
Because the stakes are higher now. We really need to be mobilized on this, and we can't let this slip at all. I mean, we have such the opportunity.
I had much the same feeling. I was in my 20s, right?
Yeah.
In the 70s. But I had much the same feeling then at that election as I did now. I couldn't believe everybody I knew was not voting for Reagan.
Right.
And everybody I knew was, you know, voting for Clinton. And I couldn't figure out what happened. And I think it goes back to we're separated.
Well, you know, let's talk about the 70s. I mean, hard times, right? There was an energy crisis,
yeah.
The long lines at fuel pumps. I remember my parents complaining because they had to spend about 3 hours in line to get fuel for their car. And actually, that's footage that I'll be sharing tomorrow night because, you know, unless you feel it, it's you can't really connect with it. And there was incredible fear. There was a recession. There were high interest rates. There was a lot. But that was the time to tack. I mean, you know, to switch from where we were. And there was, I guess when you're worried about feeding your family, when you're worried about getting to work, you've got that kind of pressure, your fears do begin to lead you, don't they?
Yeah.
And that, you know, will it happen here again? I mean, it could. Unless we mindfully and carefully and strategically, which I know Governor Brown is trying to do and people like you are trying to do, is put things in place so we don't panic. And we all, like you said, we're all in this together. Let's hold hands and jump and make it happen. And and not leave anybody out. That's, I think, where we all have to, it's not a competition.
Yeah. I just had a couple memories from back in those times. I lived in the Arlington, Virginia area, right by Washington, D.C. And one of them was, I had a little Volkswagen. One of them was waiting in the gas lines.
Yeah.
And the other thing was, there were so many protests, Vietnam, all of that, was driving to work one morning and seeing a military tank on Key Bridge because they were the yuppies or something were going to be saying they were taking over the bridges. So it was like the country was at war.
Wow.
You know, with the military was actually out there. There was so much turmoil and so much hatred and not understanding. Just it was pushing for what you firmly, clearly believed in was right, and it was parents against kids. All of that, just the tension. And some of that is now.
Well, too. If you look at what happened with the pipeline, and it was full military artillery. I can't say the word, with our Native Americans.
Yes, yeah.
Interestingly, though, with the Native Americans and that event, it's really given a higher level of consciousness. I mean, what I'm seeing is a higher respect to Native American cultures. People are coming more locally into their own, finding out and raising the discussion about their local tribes.
I agree. I think that was a...
So maybe ultimately this will grow to a larger movement because what happened was just horrific.
Governor Brown said something, his speech to the American Geophysical Society, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, they were graduating, and he pulled up something from his Jesuit past, and it was a Latin term, and I can't remember the first part of it, but the second part was absurdum. And what he was saying, he was talking about Trump coming into office and all that, and that sometimes you can have people split on an issue, just really, really split and not believing very, very different things. But if something gets taken to a level of absurdity, you know, it's when it gets reached absurdum that there is a shift, because the people who believe the other way just say, this is ridiculous. And that absurdity is what unites people and allows them to move together.
Nice.
So that's a hope that I have, because we certainly have absurdity.
and I was at the People's Summit in Chicago, the launch of the Sanders Institute, just a few weeks back. And I'll tell you what I saw with the young people. They're mobilized and they're smart and they know what's coming at them. And they're getting ready. You know, I like to know what team I'm on.
Yeah.
I'm on their team, and as you are too, for sure. And it's that they give me hope when I see what they're seeing, because they see it. And there's been a generation, at least for the last 10 years, who understand what global climate is and what they're facing. You know, and like you, it's a time where you have to start asking, what is the most important thing to be doing right now? I mean, that's what I came away with a few years back. It was like I just kind of stopped my life and said, what is the most important thing I can do? I mean, we got enough chefs out there, and I like playing the guitar, but I'm really bad at it, so I should leave that alone. And but I had kids coming into the world, and that's when I started getting involved with ocean efforts and and seeing what's happening with the oceans, as you were referring to, because that's where most of our oxygen comes from.
Yeah.
And it's warming up. That's not good.
Nope. No. And all the plastic size, plastic pieces about the size of rice, which is like plankton size, and going into the food chain.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. There was an article I saw today with Sea Shepherd, and you know they're trying to stop the move to domesticate, in the oceans, the salmon, to grow salmon in big pens up north because of the risk to the wild salmon. I mean, it's just like everything we do has some sort of effect. You know, you got to think about it.
I want to say something too, just take an opportunity to say something about what's some things that are going on in our county, in Marin, that are so cool. So we've had Marin Clean Energy.
Yes.
We were the first community choice aggregation, nonprofit electricity provider. We fought it, and Marin was the one that we were able to make it happen. So that was here. And then we had the Marin Carbon Project, which a lot of people still haven't heard about, but where we did scientifically prove that by putting a half an inch of compost on grassland, it can sequester like 40 times as much carbon by the plants dig their roots down deeper and grow more leaves, and it pulls the carbon out of the atmosphere. That is a true hope if we can harness that and make it happen. But we're running out of time. And then the last thing I want to mention is the lawsuit that Marin County filed against 37 major oil companies. Do you know about that?
I don't know. Let's talk about this.
This is way cool. This is like last week, and it was Marin County, San Mateo County, and it's not long, Imperial Beach, California, small town on the coast, each filed independent lawsuits against these oil companies claiming public nuisance.
Oh, I love it.
And so what they're saying is, and it may work this time, what they're saying is that just like what the tobacco companies did, where they knew that smoking cigarettes caused lung cancer, and they mounted an active campaign to confuse people about it, to keep their profits up. There, we have documented proof that ExxonMobil and other oil companies did the same thing. They knew for 20, 30, 40 years about climate change and what it was causing, what it would cause for them. They knew their product was going to kill. They knew their product was going to kill. So what they had that knowledge, and they kept using their product. And their product now has caused and is going to cause sea level rise, which is the destruction. It's the comparability of cigarettes destroying our lungs, our properties being destroyed by the public nuisance they're creating of a rising sea.
Wow.
And because Marin and San Mateo, but I'll just talk about Marin, just created a vulnerability assessment that documented the actual costs of what sea level rise and climate change are going to be expected to cause. They came out with $15.5 billion.
My gosh.
And that's what they're suing the oil companies for. So
wow.
This was tried once before, but there wasn't the substantive information then that we have now with the vulnerability assessment. Everything's documented, and we have the tobacco industries, and we have, through freedom of information requests, we have all this information written that the oil companies have. They knew, and
they
knew. We've got it down. So we may, and if we could get the $15.5 billion, think of what we could start doing here to adapt, to protect what we have, to help restore what's been lost here, and plant salt marshes to act as buffers for the rising seas, and protect our cities and our airports and all our infrastructure.
And creating a model for other cities and other towns too.
Yeah. And one another really cool thing we did too that was developed here in doing these vulnerability assessments, we did one on the coast too. It involves, also part of it involves working with the public. But we, a man named, I think it was Jack Leipster, who's working for the county and helping with this work. I think he was the one that did this, or maybe with some of his partners too. They created something called the Game of Floods. And it's like a board game with an island. And the island has like sewage treatment plants and libraries and hospitals and roads going around the outside. And it's got a wealthy community that's right on the coast. And it's got a poor community that's right on the coast. And the people playing the game become like, you know, city council people. And they've got to decide, the sea level's rising. They've got to decide how to protect the areas, what they have to let go of. And there's like four or five different techniques or remedies that they can put, like the salt marsh or a dike, or just let the building go off into the ocean. They have all these things, and how much each costs. So you're working with a group of people around it. It's, again, very empowering because it's our civic leaders, but it's also the community that's going to have to be making these decisions, and we need to start now.
Now. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Tamara Peters, thank you so much for joining Take Back. There's hope. We got people like you running the show here. Gosh, I you know, just listening and talk. These are the kind of conversations we need more of, these positive efforts to hear, because you've just inspired me today, and I'm going to go back and look at my carbon emissions again. And really, because that's something we can all do. And can you give those dates and time again? This is all information that you can find on resilientneighborhoods.org.
Yes. Okay, so San Rafael Community Center. It's on Tuesday nights starting at 7 o'clock, and those meetings start September 26th. And you can go to our website and you can just register for it right then. And also the Mill Valley Public Library, Thursday nights from 7 to 9 and starting on September 21st. You'll find the classes really fun, and we still are doing neighborhood teams if you want to work with neighbors or bring a neighbor to the community center classes. And we'll be starting teams. We're going to be maybe doing one in Belvedere. We're going to be speaking at San Francisco Yacht Club, and we're working with the Belvedere Tiburon area. Anyway, we're all throughout Marin, and we want to reach out to people who care and just haven't known what to do. And also with Al Gore's movie coming out this weekend.
Yes.
And people, you see that and you want to know, oh my God, this is so important. What can I do? What you can do is Resilient Neighborhoods. Sign up and do a team.
So fantastic. It's an adventure. We're all on this great adventure. Well, thank you again to Tamara Peters for really dedicating your life to helping all of us, my kids too, the next generation, really take responsibility for our actions and think about our actions and turn this world around. Coming up next week, we also have Sabrina Schrader. She's going to join us from Coal Country, West Virginia. And we're going to learn about what they're doing over there. She says it is like living in a war zone over there, and we're going to find some positive ways to help them because we are in this all together. Also tomorrow night, a little plug for myself, I have to give this to you all. August 2nd at the Community Media Center of Marin, I'll be giving a presentation about the wisdom of former President Jimmy Carter and his energy and environmental stand in the late 1970s. It's a film called The Road Not Taken. I'm going to share 30 minutes of it to talk about his energy and environmental mission at that time. It's a bit of history that we've really forgotten, and it was visionary wisdom. So it's time to remember, and it helps give us perspective today. You can RSVP at marinartist@hotmail.com, and you can look on my website at barbaramcveigh.com for that information. That starts at 7 o'clock tomorrow at the Community Media Center of Marin. Also, there's been word that the first week of October, a little movement is growing. the Jimmy Carter Jamboree 2017. This is a grassroots event to honor President Jimmy Carter and his energy and environmental vision. CMCM, Community Media Center of Marin, is joining efforts. There are a number of organizations in Marin County that are looking to create events in order to remember his speeches, his work, and to honor him for his 93rd birthday, which is October 1st. And it's also World Habitat Day on October 3rd. And he did tremendous work with Habitat for Humanity. So we're going to start creating this, and maybe you can too. You can find that information at JimmyCarterJamboree2017.com. So a lot of good stuff is happening. It sounds like party time to me. Get your dancing shoes out and let's celebrate. Good energy. I want to thank Stuart Horn. He's the executive director here at Penguin Radio, and to the listeners here at Dominican University of California, and to all of you out there. This is Take Back and Barbara McVeigh, and I'll be back next week, Tuesday at 12 o'clock. So thank you again, Tamara. And
thank you, Barbara.
Great talking to you. Next time.